For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. I am Aaron Broughton, your host for today, sitting in for Mr. John Lawrence. Well, today on our program, I would like to invite you to come with me and explore the land of the Bible. The word Israel means many things to many people. It is a person, a name given by God to Jacob in the book of Genesis. Now, Israel means prince or minister of God. Indeed, the name given to the children of Israel was a blessing as well as a weight of eternal responsibility. They were to be God's spokespeople on this earth. God gave them a land that was to bear their name for an eternal possession. According to Genesis 15, God told Abraham that this land was to go from the great river of Egypt to the great river the Euphrates. In the many centuries of history of the Jewish people, they have never truly possessed all the land that the Lord promised them. During the wise King Solomon's reign, they probably had the largest expanse of this kingdom ever. As they await that future day, when they get all that land, the Jewish people continue to dwell in the land, at least part of the land. Well, today, the country and land of Israel is as diverse as the people who live there. Let us start our journey in the north, in northern Israel. From the Sea of Galilee and up northward, you will find the Golan Heights on the eastern side that borders the countries of Jordan and Syria. Now, the Golan is a beautiful and rugged area of the country that has sweeping views of Israel. This is really the high ground of Israel. Israel has been defending this area, especially since the Six-Day War in 1967. Before that, it was under Syria. Now, the United Nations currently has an outpost in a demilitarized zone called Kenitra that serves as a buffer between Israel and Syria. Well, since 1967, there's been a relative quiet in the strategic area, and more so after the Yom Kippur War in 73. But there have been recent skirmishes, especially in the recent months, between the Syrian army and the Syrian rebel forces that have spilled into Israel a little bit. Well, so far, this has been kept in check by the Israeli army. One ironic thing that has not been reported by major news sources is that the Israelis have been somewhat secretly taking care of some of the wounded from this conflict. As they come over the Israeli border, they're cared for and then sent back to Syria. As we move up further from the Golan Heights, we come to Mount Hermon. Here is a ski resort in a snow-capped mountain. Yes, even in Israel. The snow that comes from the 7,000-foot mountain will eventually melt, creating the headwaters of the River Jordan, and then make their way southward towards the Sea of Galilee. This area is where we read of the biblical site of Tel Dan, located next to the Lebanese border today. This is where we remember the unique biblical description of the land and the area of Israel from Dan to Beersheba. In this beautiful spot on the Dan River is a nature reserve that is sometimes called the Garden of Eden. Just a beautiful area. I invite you to go if you can. Well, this, of course, is not the Garden of Eden we read of in Genesis, but it boasts some amazing hiking trails along quiet streams in a thickly wooded area. As we make our way south from Tel Dan through the town of Kiryat Shmona, we will pass by the ancient Canaanite city of Hazor. We come now to the shores of the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee is quite a sight to behold. Most people do not know that the Sea of Galilee actually sits about 600 feet below sea level. It's about 14 miles long north to south and about 6 to 7 miles wide west to east. One unique feature about visiting the Sea of Galilee is that it is largely unchanged in topography since the time of Jesus. This is especially true when you tour the northern area of the Galilee. Visiting sites like Capernaum and Bethsaida really gives a feeling of stepping back in time to the stories that we read of in the gospel accounts. Jesus performed many miracles here in this very area. Here, he set up his ministry headquarters. It was along these shores of Galilee where he called the first disciples and then confirmed that calling with them after the resurrection in the book of John. Truly, the northern area of Israel is truly fascinating and definitely a favorite among many visitors to the Holy Land. From ancient history to current people and industry, there is something to learn and appreciate at every turn. I invite you to join us again as we will drive to the coastal plain, the land of Israel, in the next program. Also, I wanted to mention that IBJM is hosting a special tour to Israel March 10th through the 21st, 2014. Contact us at 423 866-8150 or go online at ibjm.org for more information. Come and be blessed. Well, now with this in mind, let's open our Bibles as we study together with our teacher and Jewish believer, Brother Mark Oshman.
Welcome back to another radio program. Our survey of the Old Testament minor prophets will continue by a brief examination of the books of Obadiah and Jonah. The number of people referred to by the name Obadiah in the Old Testament exceeds 10. However, no certainty exists as to which of these men, if any of them, authored the book of Obadiah. Perhaps the writer might be the same individual by that name who encountered the prophet Elijah, as recorded in 1 Kings 18. Such a conjecture, though possible, has no definite historical basis, though. The book of Obadiah has only a single chapter of 21 verses. It is the shortest book in the Old Testament. Its solitary theme is God's judgment on the nation of Edom. God proclaimed, quote, "How are the things of Esau searched out? How are his hidden things sought up?" Unquote. Even Edom's allies had turned against her. The Edomites had allowed their pride to convince them that their location in the mountainous areas served to protect them. However, God's judgments had reduced Edom to an insignificant nation. He further vowed to remove Edom's wise men and mighty men by taking away their understanding. The affliction suffered by the Edomites was connected to their treatment of the Jews. The Edomites rejoiced over the sufferings of the Jewish people when various foreign powers entered their gates. Moreover, the Edomites themselves despoiled the Jews. Edom cut off potential escape routes. More than that, they delivered whatever Jews they apprehended and gave them back to their oppressors. These events could have occurred either during the middle of the 9th century B.C., as hinted in 2 Kings chapter 8, or in the late 7th century B.C., just after the conquest of Judah by the Babylonians. God said that the day of the Lord will come, when the Edomites, the Philistines, and the Canaanites will all lose their lands. As for the Jewish people, God will give the remnant returning to Israel possession of the territories around them. God said he would send saviors up to Mount Zion. They will judge Edom. In the final analysis, Obadiah wrote, "The kingdom shall be the Lord's." We now turn our attention to the book of Jonah and the nation of Assyria. Both the Old Testament and the New Testament attested to the historicity of the events in Jonah. The prophet came from Gath Hepher, a city in Galilee located near Nazareth. Thus, the Pharisees' response to Nicodemus, "Out of Galilee ariseth no prophet." The Pharisees' response to Nicodemus was inaccurate. Though classified among the prophetic books, the book of Jonah was actually a historical narrative. The only prophecy found in the book consisted of Jonah's proclamation to the Ninevites, quote, "Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown," unquote. God commanded Jonah to go to Nineveh and cry out against it. Instead, the prophet went to Joppa and boarded a ship bound for Tarshish in the opposite direction. He went into the hold of his vessel and fell asleep. After the ship embarked, God sent a mighty tempest into the waters. It tossed the boat to and fro. Frightened passengers began calling upon their deities to help them. The shipmaster found Jonah sleeping and awakened him, calling upon him to do the same. Those on board cast lots to see who was responsible for the storm. The lot revealed Jonah to be the party responsible. When they asked him about his identity, he replied, quote, "I am an Hebrew, and I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, which made the sea and the dry land," unquote. His answer frightened those who heard it. Jonah advised the passengers to throw him overboard so that the tempest would cease. The crew tried rowing to land, but could not do so. Finally, they did what Jonah suggested and threw him overboard. When they did, the storm ended. Those aboard the ship feared God exceedingly and offered sacrifices to him. A great fish prepared by God swallowed Jonah. the prophet spent 3 days and three nights in that great fish's belly. Jesus Christ alluded to the circumstance of the Gospel of Matthew as the sign of the prophet Jonas. During that interval, Jonah's affliction impelled him to pray unto God. Though God had cast the prophet out of his sight, Jonah said, he hoped that he would again see God's temple. The prophet uttered this sentence during his time in the great fish. Quote, I went down to the bottoms of the mountains. The earth with her bars was about me forever. Yet hast thou brought up my life from corruption, unquote. This phraseology suggested that Jonah might have actually died, and God resurrected him from the dead. The prophet observed that those who turned to what he called lying vanities abandoned their hope of mercy. Salvation comes from God. After Jonah's experience in the great fish, God spoke to that fish, and it spewed Jonah out onto dry land. God again commissioned Jonah to go to the Ninevites and proclaim his message to them. As the capital of the Assyrian Empire, Nineveh was a large city. Jonah entered into it and preached God's message. The Ninevites believed God. They proclaimed a fast. They wore sackcloth. Even their king did so, asking, quote, who can tell if God will turn and repent, and turn away from his fierce anger that we perish not, unquote. God beheld their repentance. He heard their prayer and withheld his judgment. God's decision to spare the Ninevites greatly enraged Jonah. He suspected that God's mercy would come into play and that God would not carry out his sentence of judgment. The prophet even asked God to kill him. God responded by asking Jonah, quote, doest thou well to be angry, unquote. The prophet encamped outside of Nineveh to see if God would indeed destroy the city. While he sat there, God taught him a lesson relating to mercy and compassion. God prepared a gourd to give Jonah shade, a circumstance that the prophet greatly appreciated. However, God also prepared a worm to damage the plant, and the gourd withered overnight. After the sun had risen on the following day, God sent a strong east wind. This change in climate made Jonah grow very warm, his anger renewed. He again expressed the wish that he would die. Again, God asked him, quote, doest thou well to be angry for the gourd? Unquote. Jonah replied that his anger was an appropriate reaction to the situation. God rebuked Jonah for his concern over the existence of the gourd. A gourd he had done nothing to create or nourish. A plant which existed only for a short time. By contrast, God made it clear that Jonah had no right to criticize him regarding his treatment of Nineveh. God asked Jonah, quote, should not I spare Nineveh, that great city, wherein are more than 60,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left hand, and also much cattle? The book of Jonah closed with that confrontation between Jonah and God. History notes that the reprieve God granted to Jonah was only a temporary one. As soon as God's threat no longer seemed imminent, the Ninevites seemed to have returned to their wicked ways. God ultimately destroyed both the city of Nineveh and the Assyrian Empire itself. What about Jonah's attitude? It reflected the outlook of those laborers in Jesus Christ's parable of the householder, found in Matthew 20. Those men grew angry because they received the same wages as workers who put in fewer hours. In reply, the householder told them, quote, is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is thine eye evil because I am good? Unquote. God could have directed similar words to Jonah on that occasion. We've come to the end of another daily radio broadcast. Please come back to listen to future programs about the Old Testament books.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150. Or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.